Bonjour, and welcome to the Amateur Detective Club. This club is exactly how it sounds. A bunch of amateurs talking about their favorite mysteries. So if you encounter a real mystery or a murder, contact the proper authorities. Do not come to us. We do not know what we are doing. But enjoy the program. Allons-y. Let us begin.
I now call this meeting of the Amateur Detective Club to order. Enough of this chaos. I'm Tristan Miller, Dissolosity Sleuth.
I'm Melissa Maley, the spy.
I'm Tyler Riley, cop and a half.
Well, today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering, don't shake your head at me, Melissa. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/ADCpod and browse the unmatched selections of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/ADCpod today. It's easy as ADC, just like that Jackson 5 song.
Aw. You got a book recommendation?
Well, The Hollow, I suppose, the book on which this episode is based, is always kind of what I go with.
Yeah, that's a
good
idea.
Not the song by Lady Gaga?
I cannot say I've ever heard that song.
Hmm.
I have not heard that song, the song I have never heard.
Ah.
Fair enough. I believe it was performed during the star being birthed.
Yeah. It sounds so much more intimate with being birthed than born.
The star after birth? It's this sequel? So, normally we do a bit of talking, catching up, whatnot at the beginning of the show to try and get it out. It never fully gets out. We can never exorcise the demon that is our friendship. So, I have a topic, and I wanted to surprise the two of you.
Great.
And it's that they canceled Dr. Seuss. No.
Oh, God. They didn't, by the way, just in case anyone was unclear.
Not. Yeah. I don't think anything is clear anymore. No. Sure. What was your first crush in a movie or TV show?
We have been over this ad nauseum.
We did.
Me. Oh, right. Yeah, have we talked about this before?
Yes.
I just want to talk about Kiki's Delivery Service and how good it is.
We have talked, Brendan Fraser and George at the Jungle. We've been
here. So many times.
Yeah, we have.
Let me quick come up with something else then.
Our listeners are like, we know.
What is your favorite B-52 song to stall until I figure out? Is it Love Shack or Rock Lobster, the two known B-52 shows?
I was going to say the song from the Flintstones movie.
Yes! Yabba Dabba, don't get me started on that movie.
Film legend Elizabeth Taylor's final film. It's the Flintstones.
Do you ever think about that?
Is that true?
It is.
Oh, wow. That's
God
sad.
Bless.
Not her final, like, acting performance, but the first time on film. I feel like the last thing she did was actually a production of Love Letters with James Earl Jones.
Oh, that's better.
Yeah.
Do you know what cartoon character I had a crush on? That's weird.
Oh, I guess I suppose we can do that.
Yeah. Go for it.
What's your weird first cartoon crush? Robin Hood, who is a fox.
I don't think that's as weird.
No, it's not.
It's very common.
It's pretty common. But it's weird that he's a fox.
Yeah, it's uncomfortably common, but like you take comfort in knowing that other people felt similarly.
The fox
but like
is
it's
hot.
Also, but like it's a fox though.
Yeah,
is the problem.
The thing is, this fox.
Because you shouldn't be attracted to animals, Tristan, is what the thing is.
Okay, here's the real question,
sure.
And I'm sorry to, you know, stop your story about being horny for a cartoon.
Yes.
But at what point does an anthropomorphic animal just become a human in makeup? Because, like, for example, if you find Tamalis O'Malley, the alley cat, attractive, which he has a fun personality, but that's messed up. He's fully a cat. He walks like a cat, moves like a cat. Robin Hood is walking on his hind legs. He's talking. He's making soup for criminy. Like,
yeah,
he's just okay. He's just a guy in makeup. Like, if you go and see Cats, the musical Cats, the movie is the only time I've ever found Taylor Swift attractive, and I had to wrestle with that.
The I'm fact like, that oh. as a cat you found her.
Yes, yeah, the only time I'm like, this makes sense.
Okay.
Facially. But like, if you go see Cats and you're like, damn, these cats are sexy.
Yeah.
Because they're in like tights and they're singing and moving around.
And I like, do. Yeah. And
I
do.
You want Mistopheles
think...
to give you a rum tum tugger? Is that.
If someone goes, Idris Elba in Cats is hot, people are like, yeah.
Well, I mean, because it's Idris Elba.
Yeah.
Like, they're not saying the character is hot at that point, they're saying the actor is hot.
But I think about
you know
the
what
thing,
I mean.
Yes, the thing though about the Fox Robin Hood is exactly what Tristan is saying, because the things that are appealing about him are not the parts of him that are a fox.
No, that
you're
is
not like let me get in that nose, let me
no,
let me chase that like, tail. Ooh,
ooh, the lolly.
You made me check out my headphones. That was very good.
But then also, of course, Prince Eric.
Oh, that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Jasmine was up there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they put her in that outfit and that, you know, helps.
Touching on that for just a second, I don't know what it was about it. I don't know what I
the
saw
movie
first.
It, you were no. attracted to Tim Curry as Pennywise.
I'll take a penny for his thoughts, if you know what I mean. But no. Jasmine in that one outfit where like she's being held captive by
Jafar.
Oh,
yeah. Well, I mean.
And I don't know if I saw that first or if I saw Carrie Fisher first.
Oh,
if
sure.
you know what I mean. Yeah. They're very similar to each other.
They
That's
are.
True.
The fox from Robin Hood is universally considered hot.
Yeah.
So, yes, you know, as agrees. Is Mary...
Poppins?
yeah, Mary Poppins.
Maid Marian. Yeah.
Maid Marian, yes. And also, yes, Mary Poppins can get it anytime she wants to. That is... She's so cute. Are you kidding me?
I didn't feel it as much for Julie Andrews because I just...
Really?
Think, yeah, no... But Emily Blunt, yes.
Exact opposite.
Huh. Oh, I'm on the Melissa. Fair, but like her as Mary Poppins worked for me.
Well, good. I think, you know, I mentioned earlier Kiki's Delivery Service. That was my first, like I was like 8 or something. That was very formative for me. But then also Anastasia.
Yeah.
I don't think there has been a hotter cartoon couple than Anastasia and Dimitri.
Like, Dimitri is, yeah.
They're both on, like, they're both in, like 9 or 10s. They're both, they have like great chemistry. Oh, Tyler, did we get to you?
No.
No, please. Yeah, this is always what happens. Melissa and I interrupt each other to the point where we...
The three fairies from Sleeping Beauty.
Oh my God.
Just kidding. Just kidding.
I genuinely was so excited.
I know, me too.
I want to be a part of a thruple so badly. Are you kidding me?
Well, I'll be a quuple. It'll be because
sure.
you're 4.
Yeah.
Whatever it would be.
A quadruple?
Sure.
I mean, with the three of them, you would just be a guest star, though, to be completely fair. Like, you wouldn't really be.
Yeah.
Which is what I want. I want to roll up. I want all the attention.
Uh-huh.
And I want to walk away. Unscathed.
There you go.
Oh, man.
Was it the cartoon avatar of me that I had for a while on my Twitter? Just truly trying to fill the silence.
I was trying to think. I think it might be Jasmine as well, but like also Cocoum, though.
Oh, sure.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Jasmine and Cocoum.
I never, never got the appeal of John Smith.
I understood it.
I mean, he's exotic, I suppose.
Yeah.
In the context.
And, like, for her age,
Yeah.
Like, lends herself to, like, wanting an F-boy like John Smith.
Yeah. That's true.
That's true. She's, like, what, 16?
Had she had a couple years? Yeah. I'm sure she would have, like, eventually seen, like, what a catch Kokomon was. But, he didn't live for her to see him.
Yeah. Such a shame. Rip, pour one out for my homie, Kokomon.
Oh.
I had that stuck in my head, the music from that, but it was just the line, should I marry Kokomon? And then I was like, should I?
That stuck in my head a lot.
Is the answer. Yes, we've solved it.
Yeah.
There is something about that line, because that stuck in my head too a lot when I was a kid. That was, I love Alan Menken music. So, you know, I listened to the soundtrack repeatedly.
You know, he be making that music.
Yeah, he does. But that line, it's got some sort of a, it's like plosives the syncopation and of it. Stuff.
Yeah.
It's like cellar door. They say that cellar door is the most pleasing sentence in all of English. Which I disagree with, but
yeah.
It's just a cotton. Okay, yeah, okay. Just okay, so the fuck me, I guess. Kill the podcast.
We don't respect you enough.
Who else is hot? I wanted to bring this up. As someone who watches anime, and also I've just finished the series Black Dynamite, we keep talking about it. I get so miffed when someone purposely draws like an adult, not even, you know, with anime that has a whole, you know, problem of like a bunch of teen girls being drawn scantily clad and yada, yada, yada. However, I get so angry when someone draws a cartoon hot on purpose. And I have no idea why. I'm like, how dare you make me horny for a 2D image? What? I was watching Black Dynamite and like, they're all drawn a certain way. And I was just like, I would risk it all for Honeybee. And she's not even real. And I think that's it.
Hey, but even real life Honeybee.
Oh, for sure. Honey.
I was supposed to be on like a panel with her. But she had to, like, her shoot ran late.
Mm-hmm. She heard you were there, and she made up an excuse.
I surveil her from a legal distance. It is not stalking.
Okay. Freaking TMZ over here.
Yes.
There's a car driving down an English road.
So today, we are talking about...
Thank you, Melissa.
You're so welcome. Today, we are talking about Agatha Christie's Poirot, series 9, episode 4, The Hollow. This episode first aired September 26th, 2004. So yes, we have a car, Tristan, a car.
It goes click-a-cling-cling-clang-cling-cling down the street.
Oh, and someone's going to pass this permit.
Screw you, man. So you see this car zipping down the street, and it's this guy, the most average looking man I've ever seen. The man cannot look more normal. And he rolls up. The man looks mad normal. The man can look not more normal if he tried. He rolls up and he goes up to an artist studio, and there's a lady there, and she cannot more look like Gates McFadden from Star Trek.
And
which is also to say, normal but pretty. I love, so can I say, and I don't mean that as an insult.
Okay.
I love how this series, most of the time, casts believable people. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, they cast for the correct role. You know?
Sure.
You get, like, your Emily Blunt, who roll in playing, like, a highfalutin, very clearly meant to be perceived as an attractive person and this sort of thing. And eventually Michael Fassbender shows up and, you know, he's nice to look at, etc. But most of the time, it's just like, here are normal-looking actors, more or less, which I very much enjoy. Now, I say this man looks more normal, but there's another character, another actor, that looks even more normal than him. And I did not believe that was possible. I said to this man, you could not look more normal. There's no one more normal looking than this man, I said out loud by myself. And gosh, then in a later scene, I was like, this man is more normal somehow. Anyway.
We're really getting into the depths of this episode here.
I think a lot.
And now the ad break.
Hit, a palpable hit.
Tyler, did you think that this man looked very normal?
No, but like, he didn't look abnormal.
Sure.
Either.
No.
he was like a pleasant looking man. He was a normal looking man. Yes.
Okay.
I have seen more normal people, but he was a normal looking person.
Jonathan Cake is the actor. He does stuff. He does
good. I'm sorry. Who did you say?
Jonathan Cake.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and he's great.
Because Jonathan had that cake.
And ate it too. As we will find out.
Yeah, he do.
I think actually Henrietta, the sculptor, is quite pretty. I think Gates McFadden is as well.
Gates McFadden can still get it, but they're in the artist studio. She's a sculptor, but then again, no, she's a sculptor, and they're talking and flirting, and it's clear that he's having an affair with her.
Yeah, he mentions his wife and children, and you know, she's not a fan of either of those things. But they're having their their sexy little art affair.
You know what I don't like? Your wife and kids.
Can't possibly imagine why.
Yeah.
Really, it was a great sitcom on ABC that lasted about 5 seasons.
Yeah, that's. I had heard that that was a very good one.
Are you referring to Married with Children?
No, I'm referring to My Wife and Kids, starring Damon Wayans and Tisha Campbell-Martin. Thank you.
Put me in my place.
Yeah. As needs to be done.
He comes into my home.
Oh, by the way, his coffee.
Tyler is in studio again. We're almost there, folks. We're so close.
Yes. But my mic is plugged in properly this time, so that's exciting for all of our ears. And so, yes, they are hanging out, having their affair, and that's established. So then we get a weekend in the country. How exciting. What a horrible thought. A weekend in the country.
I love delighted. A little night music. No, you're not. For that.
You're welcome. Shout out to all the Sondheim fans out there that clearly listen to this podcast. Actually, there might be quite a few. But yes, everyone's going to the country. We've got John Christo, the man.
The normal man.
Sure. His wife, Gerda, who is a bad driver, apparently. We have Henrietta is already up there because it's her family's land?
Yes.
Okay. And her family is Lucy and Lucy's husband, Henry. And their nephew.
Midge.
Midge is up there too. And then there's Edward, who is, I think, Lucy and Henry's son or nephew.
Nephew, I believe.
I think it's nephew. That's right. Yes. And then they have a couple of new renters or that have gotten like cottages at this estate.
Dovecotes, and I forget what the other property is referred to as.
Everything's got to have a name. It's
And they're on the main property is Ainswick, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was called the Hollow.
Okay. Lucy keeps talking about a property though that is important, whether we're on that particular property or not.
Okay.
It's like a family property.
It is the property on which we are, but it is the encompassing thing. The home at which we are based is referred to as the Hollow.
There we go.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. But the overarching property is...
The acres, the tracks. Yes.
Gotcha.
Okay.
That tracks.
And then we have, in another cottage, we've got an actress who is not yet named when we get there. So everyone assembles. We get a scene between Henrietta and Edward.
Yes.
In which Edward makes it very clear. Basically, he says, "Why don't you marry me?" She says, mm-hmm. "It's really exhausting because I like you so much, but not in that way. And so please don't make me continue to have this conversation with you."
Yes. And he says, Edward is the man who pushed the boundary to look more normal.
Really?
See, I think he's cute.
I think we grew up just around different people.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Blonde hair, blue eyes, neutral person.
I find him endearing. Mm. It's not necessarily, I don't know. I also, as long as they're not gross in the way that their love is unrequited, a nice guy whose love is unrequited tugs at my heartstrings a little bit. So that might be where I'm like, oh, what a cute guy.
I was going to say, he reminded me a lot of JLB in this scene.
JLB Matacone?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they're very same.
So they all gather together in the dining room, living room to have dinner and social times. And like they do in all of these Poirot.
Yes, honestly.
There's a dinner parting occurring.
Yeah, we got to get all our characters in a room together.
Yeah. Not quite yet.
Oh, okay.
Because we get introduced to the character of Lucy barging into Midge's room at very early in the morning.
6:30.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
Because
I remember
this specifically because I remember watching it and thinking to myself, oh, well, Lucy has to be murdered because waking me up at 6:30 in the morning is grounds for murder.
Lucy's going to die and it was Midge because...
Yep, and I was like, murderer, we know who the murderer was and why it was justified.
Justifiable, absolutely.
Spoiler alert, that is not how this episode goes down.
No, it is not. But yes, Lucy is very preoccupied with all of the preparations and feeling always very put out. It's one of those people who absolutely loves entertaining and complains about it constantly.
Like yours truly.
They get really excited to have people over, but everything is a huge deal. It is so much work and nothing else matters. Very, very self-focused. And I thought that this actress looked so much like Imelda Staunton for a moment. Imelda Staunton plays Dolores Umbridge in the Harry Potter films.
And I agree with you. I said to myself out loud, I was like, oh, Imelda Staunton is in a wonderful episode of A Bit of Fry and Laurie. I highly recommend you both look it up. She is hilarious.
She also did a production of Gypsy quite recently, and I believe the recording is on Broadway HD for those who subscribe to that. Fantastic performance. Wish they had brought the production over here.
Yeah, that would have been great.
So Lucy Runch is in, and she is mad hype about the whole, like, people coming over. But she's also very excited because the crime man has rented a cottage down the street.
Right.
Meaning Poirot.
Exactly.
She's like, oh my gosh, a chance for drama. Famous person. Ooh, intrigue. Fascinating.
Yeah. Yes. So, and of course,
at this point, we realize, as the audience, this is another ruined vacation for one Hercule Poirot.
Out of a string of them. It's been, what, 3 or 4?
Yeah. This man has tried to vacation every episode
this season. Yeah.
Cannot catch a break.
Yeah. Every single episode involves someone coming over to someone's home for like a weekend gathering and it going terribly awry and affairs and spoilers, murder. And that's one of the reasons I will give it the rating I will give it at the end of the episode.
Okay.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So we do have a dinner gathering, and they have invited Poirot. And at some point, Lucy says, "Oh, it makes you feel like something dangerous is going to happen." And it just feels like Poirot is going to turn to the camera and say, "Well, now it is." So,
yeah, Jim fully Jims the camera.
Yeah. So, yes, they talk about...
It's a living.
They talk about how sometimes they play this game where, you know, you have to solve a murder...
It's called the murder game. Like, it's not creative.
No, it's
called
not.
The murder game.
Yeah. Basically, they stage a murder and you have to figure out who it is. You know. So, they say that they're going to do that.
But at the dinner as well, Henrietta keeps going on and on about it, like, oh, you think you're so creative, and ooh, Poirot, you big nasty man, you think that you can solve any ding-dang crime, huh? What if the person's cleverer than you? And he's like, this will never happen.
This is not, this does not occur. It is unlikely.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Because he talks about the logic and this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And he's like, logically, it will never occur.
And
we
get a lot of screen time with John and the fact that he really doesn't treat his wife super nice. And she seems to just absolutely worship him. She is all about him. She thinks he is so selfless, and he's a good doctor, and he's so good with his patients, and he's trying to solve you know, this disease that has no cure.
Ridgeway's disease.
Ridgeway's disease.
Which is a name that keeps cropping up in these stories, Ridgeway.
Yes.
It's like, did she know a Ridgeway growing up or something? I don't know.
Perhaps.
Agatha, come on. I know you have to write what you know, but...
Well.
But we didn't touch on it because it's not like a major plot point, because we just kind of just touched on it. But we do get this sense... prior to this, anytime we see Gerda and John together, like, he's always having to correct her, or he's always second guessing everything that she's doing.
Because they're playing Jim Rummy later on, and he's like,
why did you start with diamonds or something?
Yeah, and he's just an absolute jackass.
She like goes just like start the car, and like she can't get like the ignition to, like, to catch or whatever, and he, you know, it's like, oh. Not in so many words, but like, oh, stupid woman, this is how you...
Yeah.
He's constantly putting
and
her down.
And she's, constantly, like, she's always, always apologizing.
Yeah.
She always just assumes that she's wrong. And it's very... Oh, God, it's hard to watch.
It's very... Yeah. And also, there's a scene before the party that is desperately important. Number one, the... Midge and the older woman's, whose name is?
Lucy.
Thank you. Lucy have a walk, and they kind of talk about, at one point murder is brought up, and she's like, well, if you're dead, you're dead. Who cares? Like, who did it? Yeah. And they're also talking about the property, and they need to find someone to inherit it.
Yes.
Because Lucy can't, because she's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she believes that that's fine, which is an interesting thing. Whereas Midge is a little bit more... Come on.
I think Lucy is more just like, this is the way of the world, and we've got, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. Yeah.
Which is, But also, there's a scene where after this, they're for fun shooting pistols at targets.
Yes.
And Lucy's an incredible shot. She gets, shoots twice in the head of this target. Three times in the head. And then her husband, whose name is?
Henry
says, she saved me once. I got jumped and she shot the guy in the gut and the other guy in the knee. So she's a really good shot. And then...
And she also says, well, it's just best not to think about it.
Which is like...
like the most terrifying thing I have ever heard in my life.
She's not wrong, though. You have to let instinct take over, because you just can't hesitate. The minute you hesitate...
but she's talking to a group of people who have not shot a gun before, so it's the best. Well,
admittedly, yes, you're right. But also, this is when John, the doctor,
Jacob,
Jingleheimer Hammerschmidt. His name is my name too. Did you know this? And whenever I go out,
the people always shout.
There goes
John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt.
But John and his wife,
Gerda.
Thank you. Roll up, and immediately, and without
shame,
this disgusting man goes and talks to Henrietta, puts his arm around his waist, and immediately abandons Gerda. Yep. And then Henry quite kindly ushers her over and will teach her how to shoot a gun. She's never shot before, whereas most of the other people have, because they go pigeon hunting later on, which has got to be the most boring thing.
There are a lot of pigeons.
Yeah. And there's also pheasants on the ground. But
gotta pick them up. What? They're on the ground.
Silly banana.
Okay.
Also, Henrietta does take a shot and grazes the shoulder of the target.
Yes.
So, later on, when they're having their after-dinner drinks and whatnot, the actress from the cottage next to Poirot comes sweeping into the room. Her name is Veronica Cray. She's like, I'm such a smoker and I forgot I ran out of matches. Can you believe it? Oh, how will I ever survive? Oh, hello, John.
Who knew? Everyone takes a big sniff and they go, bullshit.
She goes, oh.
Oh, no, I thought there was some capital C crate acting from Veronica.
John Christo, who would have ever thought, as I live and breathe, that you would be here? We used to be engaged. Hi, how are you doing? Oh my gosh, it's so good to see you. And he's like, this is my wife.
Yeah, exactly. To John's credit, he interrupts her and goes, this is my wife. But what's messed up is he does not say her name. He does not go, this is my wife, Gerda. We've been married for years. He just goes, this is my wife. Very nice.
The man is messed up.
He also
end of statement.
Yeah.
True.
I expected nothing from him at that point. Lucy then, because she has already made up this excuse for being over there. So
Veronica
Yeah, Veronica has. So Lucy gets, it's such a weird name. The butler.
Oh.
Jankum?
It was something with a G.
Oh, Gudgeon.
Gudgeon, yeah. So Gudgeon comes over and, like, because they had a... they had a dozen matchboxes delivered that day, because that's a thing.
Sure.
And so she decides to gift her 6 of those 12 boxes. So, like, we're being so kind, but take these and never bother us again.
Yeah, exactly. Look, here's plenty of matches. Hell out of our house.
A couple of things. One, Gudgeon shows up with them on a tray. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
How else do you expect them to be?
You're just holding them in the hands, but, like, I know. But, like, it's just Max Book, like, match boxes for dinner, like, is what made me think. Like a Looney Tunes-esque. Like, and it's secretly all lit and it blows up a Wile E. Coyote's face. Anyway, second thing is Gudgeon. Like, believe it or not, canonically, his mother was the first person to ever receive an epidural, which explains his name. His name is Gudgeon.
I think it's his last name, but okay. They are starting to retire for the night, and John immediately goes out and meets Veronica, and they have... Oh.
She pretty much offers on his behalf to mm-hmm. walk her home.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
So that's okay. how they both get out of the house.
She does not ask. She says, walk me home, will you? Not even will
I
you.
I said on his behalf.
But she... not even Bobby. Okay. He like she commands this man.
Fair.
And yeah. he is like stomping and his eyes are going out and steam's coming out of his ears. And he's like, yes, sounds good.
Yeah, like the Ouga mm-hmm. cartoon response. Yeah.
Yes.
So they start in the shadows doing some making out. And you see him much later go in and wake up Gerda. Like, oh, I'm so sorry.
Prior to that, like as he's walking back in the dark on the grounds, Henrietta is at her window and spots him.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Walking back. And also Gerda has been staying up. And then yeah. finally decides to go to sleep. And then he comes in.
Right.
And he's like, oh, I had to have a drink with the woman. Ugh.
And she's like, oh, that sounds nice to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So the next day, it is broad daylight. Poirot comes onto the grounds because they're going to play this murder game.
Yes. He's been invited to Sunday lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The night prior.
And he comes upon this pool and this little house next to the pool. Pool house, if you will. Pool they call it rock. Something else.
Yeah.
They call it something specific, but pool house is fine. And he sees that there is a person lying on the ground on the other side of the pool. Yes, Tristan.
Pavilion.
There
because
we go.
At one point they go, she's waiting in the pavilion. And mm-hmm. I, as an American, expected a tent.
Sure.
Hmm. Prior to that, John, in the morning, gets a note delivered to him from Gudgeon'd. And it's from Veronica. So he goes over to Veronica's place, which is Dovecote's. And he goes past the pool through this archway in the trees. And along there is like this another gate that we come to that separates the properties. He crosses that. He goes to the cabin. And I relay that because we do come across both of those specific spots later on in the story.
Yes. Right.
He arrives at Dovecote's and it is clear that Veronica just can't get enough of this man.
Oh my goodness. She is crawling on top of him.
She is like Maggie and Cat in a Hot Tin Roof. Like,
yeah.
She is really just doing the most.
She says, okay, great. So you're going to come to America and we're going to finally be together. And he says, I have a wife and children. And she says, I'm married too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
there's ways around that. And
nothing a good divorce lawyer can't fix is what I believe she says.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. And she says something along the lines for which I have so much respect. And he says, well, I mean, you wouldn't give up your career or whatever while I was being a doctor. She's like, you could have given up what you were doing. What I was doing was much more important. I was building my acting career. And I was like, applause.
I fundamentally disagree. I'm sorry.
I find it very obnoxious how people assume that, you know, one should give up their acting career because of something like it's less than.
Yeah.
And so I appreciated the perspective from which she was coming, where it's like, no, what I want to do is important too.
Interesting.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's really messed up that just because, you know, someone is in entertainment doesn't mean that their choices and that their career is valid.
No, I hear that, but mm-hmm. I also see the flip side of, like, it's not more important. It's like, and I'm like in the middle.
Mm.
No, I just thought it was a fun way mm-hmm. for her to come at it rather
oh, absolutely.
Than, I don't think it's more important. I think that it's that her ownership of what she wants to do is commendable.
Sure.
Yes.
I think the way she spoke down to him was rude. And also, like, they both made a choice of, like, they both wanted to pursue their career, and so it just didn't work out, and that's fine. We've all seen La La Land. It's okay when that happens. Number one.
It is okay when that happens. And
assuming
yes,
La La Land was okay to have happened.
Yeah, that's a different conversation entirely. However, I also think that being a doctor is fundamentally more important than being an actor, but that's my own personal view. Like, you're literally saving lives.
Depending.
But if you were to say, well, I'm going to be a doctor, so you have to give up your career for me, I would say goodbye.
Yeah, that's also correct. You're talking about relationship dynamics, and I'm talking about, like, anthropologically.
Yeah.
Anyhow, that's interesting because I had such an adverse reaction, and I'm glad.
But the thing, though, is what I'm trying to say is that women specifically and entertainers specifically get just so disparaged for their choices that seeing her turn it on its head was amusing in a way, because also this guy sucks. Not that his being a doctor is unimportant, but the fact that, I mean, she's not great either, but just seeing the flip side of it, turning it on his head, struck me funny and felt, you know, like, yeah, she sucks and the way she did it sucks. But what I'm saying is that it felt like a taking back of a power that is so often given to men and people who have more important careers. That's what I'm saying.
100%.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
And I was just hinting at I have a fundamental distrust of doctors based on history of doctors.
That makes sense as well.
So at the end of this conversation or this exchange, John does actually do the right thing.
Which like is Spike Lee.
Say, no, I'm married. This is not going down.
Right.
Bye. And she's like, oh, if you turn me down this time, you'll regret it, bucko.
She says, I hate you more than I thought I could possibly hate anyone in my life.
Yeah.
Which is beautiful.
Yeah.
I think that's, ooh.
So he is walking away from her.
Real quick. No, he's walking away quickly.
I thought you were trying to interject.
No, I'm sorry. He's just like zooming. He's just like, I'm gonna get out of Dodge. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, okay. He's walking very fast. And then Poirot is walking up. See them walking. Walking.
Waka waka. Like his name was Christopher, even. Walking.
Yeah. But I thought you said Christopher Reeven, and I'm like, he was in a wheelchair. What are you talking about?
You thought I said Christopher Reeves.
Yeah, Reeven. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going more Snagglepuss with my response.
Oh,
Christopher Reeven.
Heavens to Murgatroyd. But yes, he's walking away, and he gets to the pool, and he's glum by the pool, but also Poirot is trying to show up. And an important thing happens is there's an opportunity to hop over the gate using a little step stool. Poirot looks at it, looks at his shoe and says, looks at his watch and says, I have time. I'm going to take the long way.
Yeah.
And then John is crouched by the pool, looking at his reflection, going, God, who am I as a man? And then
falling in love with himself.
Yeah. Narcissist style.
And then he falls in. And that's the end of the show.
Yep. And he drowns. And no one was murdered. It was all just a terrible accident. So, and then he turns over his shoulder and gets shot. But I want to say something about this pool.
Great.
What?
These people got all this money.
Oh, yes.
And they can't clean this pool.
Yeah.
The water, it also seems cold enough where you wouldn't want to even swim in a pool.
Which is why they didn't clean it.
Yeah, but then drain the pool. These people do not manage the property correctly, and maybe it should be taken away from them.
They can't afford people to clean the floor.
Gunderson, Gankum, John, Gargamel is right there.
You leave Nyung Nyum style alone and out of this. He has enough responsibility.
But anyway, so John is shot. Then yes. Poirot stumbles upon the scene, and it's this wonderful tableau, evenly yes. spaced.
Oh my gosh. Sorry to interject. I'm interjecting.
The whole podcast is us interrupting each other.
But,
you interrupted to say, You interrupted me to say,
And back to our schedule. I forgot that on Prime, because we had to watch last series, quote unquote, last season on YouTube, because it was off BritBox last season. Oh. So I tried to take like screen grabs.
Oh, sure.
And like, I got that and I was like so proud, and I went back and it's just like a black.
Oh, really?
Because I couldn't screenshot it because it was on Prime.
Oh. So, yes. Then Poirot comes upon it. He says, oh, congratulations. You have played the game.
Yeah. Because he thinks it's the Moida game.
And he sees Jonathan lying on the... not Jonathan. Well, the actor's name is Jonathan. So, yes. Jonathan, playing John, lying on the ground. As if dead. Then you have Gerda holding the gun over him. Over her shoulder is Henrietta. On the other side is Lucy. And over her shoulder is Edward.
It's all very balanced. Beautiful yes. stage picture.
If I was Poirot, though, and I do not condone violence against women, do not take that away from what I'm about to say.
Okay.
But I would have slapped the mess out of everybody present. How you gonna have me walk up, say out loud, oh, we're playing the game, nobody correct me, and I go and touch somebody's actual real life blood?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I would have been mad as hell.
I would have as well, and I had that same reaction. I was like,
nobody stopped. They had so much time to stop him from touching the body. Not a peep.
Not a peep.
We're all frozen. It was really quite striking how long they stayed in one position.
Yeah. It was like playing red light, green light. I want to point out that there's this really beautiful thing. This whole thing is set up very well because guns are getting fired off because they're pheasant hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, and then Poirot is escorted by the butler.
Gotcha.
To the scene, to the pavilion. And so we hear the gunshot, and then we immediately see the butler. And there's even this throwaway line the night before. When they play the murder game, it's often the butler that did it, which is a fun trope in murder mystery. But it also, when you see you hear the gunfire, and then you see him, you're like, oh, ha ha. And the sequence does a very fine job of casting suspicion on everyone.
Yeah.
Despite Gerda holding the pistol. And then Henrietta takes the pistol from Gerda and in a panic throws it in the pool.
As Poirot is saying,
yeah.
Madame, please do not.
Yeah.
What really sold the scene for me was, you know, them playing Elvis Presley's Suspicious Minds underneath
stupid. And then they call the police. And they wait in the pavilion, and Poirot tells Henry not to touch anything because it's all evidence. And they call the police, and then the inspector shows up eventually, right? Is that the next thing? Or is there more information?
Yeah,
there's a whole conversation that they have in the parlor with Lucy, and they're all gathered there, and Gerda is trying to have a lie down to calm down, and Lucy's like, why is she in shock? She shot him. That doesn't make a dang bit of sense.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you just don't know how human minds work. That's fine. You don't need to.
Lucy is, by the way, very put out because, you know,
violent woman.
throws her whole entertaining schedule.
Yeah, you can't have a duck after somebody's been murdered.
It's
That's just common sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. She had this whole big meal prepared that they're not going to have now, which was duck.
But Gunderson came through in the clutch, and sandwiches were prepared.
Yes. Gunders?
He Gunderstood what was happening.
That's not his name, though.
No, it's not.
But I appreciate the pun.
Yeah.
But yeah.
What is it, though?
Gudgeon.
Gudgeon.
Like to bludgeon.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But Henrietta comes in, and she's, like, frazzled, and she's like, she says to Lucy, why do you think that Heidi, Helga?
Henrietta?
No. The other,
are you talking about?
The wife.
Gerda.
Gerda.
I knew it was German. Gerda, why do you think Gerda did it? And she's like, well, she was holding that freaking gun. She's like, well, what if she came across the gun after it had been fired? And she's like, is that what Gerda said? And she says, yes. And then the police come.
Yeah. Also, big point that I don't believe we stated, but real quick, John's dying word was,
oh, yes,
Henrietta.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. He's still alive when Poirot gets there, but just barely. And he says, Henrietta.
And he also didn't stop Poirot from touching his blood. He's also to blame.
Yeah. And he also didn't pop up and go, Poirot, I'm dying. I'm dying, Poirot.
Because you think he's dead, and then he just pops up and says, Henrietta, and then dies. And it's just like, what is going on?
It was frightening. I jumped when it happened.
Sorry, puppy on lap. Y'all can't see it, but I can see it.
You close your eyes. Imagine a dog on Melissa's lap. And if you've never seen Melissa's face before, imagine someone that you know named Melissa instead.
Also, you should be following Romeo on Instagram. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyhow. True.
The Instagram.
Yeah.
Instant gramification?
Yeah,
I'm sure that's a joke that's been made before. But so then the chief inspector of the... it's not Jap.
Yeah,
no.
I don't remember this fella's name.
His name is Grange, and he doesn't do very much.
Let's call him Mustache Man.
I had to call him Dr. Grangelove.
Sure, Dr. Grange. Inspector Grangelove. He doesn't do much. Poirot solves it, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to his credit, every time Poirot brings something up, he goes along with Poirot. He
That's
does not
true.
Do that Jap thing of like, well, are you sure? He's like, yeah,
or whoever
sense.
The last dude was, like, not Jap, whatever his name was.
Not on Death of the Nile, but the one before.
No, the one before that. Mm-hmm. Is that Cyprus?
Yeah.
Yes. Boo-hoo.
So we get some interviews. We come to understand that Lucy was really hoping that Henrietta would marry Edward so that they would inherit. I was a little bit confused as to the mechanics of this, but it was very important, like, that she not be messing around with John anymore so she could concentrate, get with Edward, get married.
I know why.
Okay.
Thank goodness. Ugh.
Because Henrietta is the only woman that they've seen Edward interested in. And as a nephew, they think that Henrietta is the last hope for him to get married because they think he's just going to go on carrying this torch for her and never marry, and then the line will just end.
Mm. End with him. Okay. Yeah. Was there something about him not being able to inherit if he wasn't married? Or
there also might have been something like that. It wouldn't surprise me.
Okay.
Because a lot of those kinds of things were, like, built into wills because they wanted to make sure that the family line was going to continue.
Yeah.
So they might not have wanted him to inherit if he wasn't going to continue the line.
Yeah, so it was a really big deal to to Lucy. Lucy's big motivator was, you know, got to keep this land in the family.
Henrietta's motive was obviously she was having an affair with John, and then he was carrying on with Veronica. That was self-evident. So jealousy there. Ditto Goethe. Ditto, and then John's rejection is the motive for Veronica.
Sure, okay. So
and
let's...
Henry doesn't really have a stake other than going along with his wife.
We have an a moment with Henrietta and Edward where Henrietta basically says, you know, you shouldn't have killed him.
Yes.
It's not going to help me fall in love with you, the fact that he's out of the way. And Edward's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Because that's his motivation. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but then, of course, the three women who are involved with him all have roughly the same motive. We have mm-hmm. Gerda, we have Veronica, and we have Henrietta, because this guy is messing around with all of them and
doing the mess around.
They can't. No. Yep.
Everybody's doing the mess around.
Can't. None of them can be too pleased about this. So we've got people with motives all over the place. Motives everywhere.
Motives here, motives there.
Yes.
And then there's this weird thing with the gun. Because they find another gun that the butler was carrying.
Right.
And they're like, why did you have the gun? And he's like, well, I was putting it away, saw.
And cleaned it.
And he, No, it's fine. Yeah, he cleaned it. And he's like, why the hell? He goes, you couldn't find any fingerprints because I did wipe it off, sir. It's turning into a chicken.
Yeah, I may not have a thing for DILFs, but GILFs.
BILFs, butlers. But yeah, he wiped it down because he's like, I thought it used a good polish, sir.
Yeah, he's just trying to keep everything clean.
Yeah, he's a very good butler.
Yes.
Yeah. The outcast would have been proud. The gun was so fresh and so clean.
There you go.
So dumb, it's funny.
Some of my favorite moments of this podcast is me looking at him like, where is he going with this? What's he gonna do? What is my man gonna spring on me next? But then at one point, Lucy comes in. She rushes in. She's like, no, I had the Glock in my egg basket. Why? Oh, there must have been some reason. I can't think. You know, I'm just so airheaded and blah da 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 da.
It's really wild. She tells this story about how she was gathering the eggs or something, and then she puts the gun on top of it, and then she covers it up, and then puts more. We're like, why? And she's like, well, I don't know. I just felt like I should pick it up.
Yeah, and she was like, I had a premonition or something.
Yeah, sure.
Yes, that someone's going to have an accident.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
She's mentioned before as well, like, having these premonitions as part of her psychological profile to be that way.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And later on, we see a brief scene of Gudgeon yelling at the maid who... who was the one who told the inspector about having seen him cleaning and putting away the gun.
Yeah.
And this poor woman is sobbing. He's like, you can't come to me and say, maybe there's a reason for him to be cleaning this gun. Maybe there is a reason. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I'm sorry, I just told the inspector. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Sob, sob, sob.
She's right.
She's right.
And he is not.
No.
In as much as like he's like, it's not prudent, it's not polite. That he calls her common at one point, which I was like, dang.
Well, you seen them rags she had on? Just kidding. I'm kidding.
Oh. It's also like, that's not her fault. That's the uniform that's
that is certainly not her fault,
But Poirot also...
like, equating, like, thinking of how class is also very important during this time. Being of a certain class, I could see why he was a little bit peeved. Because the butler, you know, often, like it's thought, does do it. Is, like, the committer of a crime. So, like, I can imagine going up to a coworker, like, for real? You couldn't have, like, given me a heads up at the very least that this was happening.
Yeah, sure. No, that makes sense.
They could have dragged my behind off to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But what if you had done it?
Then I'd be just, I would be madder. If you had talked to them.
Because then you couldn't have murdered the person.
Yeah, she would have been fired. Or murdered as well.
Yeah, stuffed down a trash compactor. Poirot interviews Veronica as well at one point. And
yes,
she lies about the confrontation that occurred between her and John. She and John? Yeah.
She and John, yeah.
The two of them?
Yet I would argue that she told her truth.
Bull malarkey.
Yeah, basically she makes it sound like he was the one who broke, well, she was the one who broke it off, and he was obsessed with her.
Yes.
Yeah. She's like, I'm Mariah Carey, and he is Eminem.
Yeah. Exactly like that. So Poirot's like, yeah, okay, sure, that sounds great. Thank you so much. he, of course, he talks at length over many different interviews, I believe, to Henrietta.
Yes, at least three.
Yeah. And she is very defiant, keeping up with that glimpse that we got of her early in the episode where she says, well, what if someone could outsmart you? And he says, I really don't think that's possible. So they continue that, and he, you know, he's very insistent that she knows something. He clearly has this feeling that she's got something going on. She also is quite a doodler, and he sees her draw a little tree. She says, oh yes, I often just draw that tree. And he had seen that tree in the pavilion. And she couldn't quite give him a good explanation for when she might have drawn it.
Yeah, not only that, she names three or four times in places that it could not have possibly been, and he corrects her.
Yeah
exactly. Also, she, in fact, initially seeks him out.
Yes.
And goes over to his cottage, having borrowed the gardener's dog, and he's like, hey, can the dog not come into the cottage? And she says, yeah, sure, no problem. And so once they begin their conversation, it comes out that, yes, she did indeed make an excuse, and she borrowed the gardener's dog. So that she had a pretense for coming over. She's like, oh, mm-hmm. I don't like dogs and horses. They're all smelly and gross and whatnot. So.
Mm. She's right to say it.
No.
No, she.
And we will disagree all day.
Well, specifically horses. Horses are just.
I mean.
Huge pains in the ass.
At least they can count. Unlike some people in this room. Me.
Oh!
Like, how dare you come at me this way? You know I was homeschooled.
Oh, gotta love a self-dunk.
Yeah. So I just had the image of you in like one of those dunking booths at the fair, and you're trying desperately to hit yourself in, like looping it over the side.
Can't you just reach out and hit the thing
on
the wall?
Or me just trying to do it like a second earlier to be like, ha, kid, I did it to myself, not you.
You will not have the satisfaction.
Yeah, I curse you with my dying breath. there's also, during this time, an inquest. As they're gathering information and they're all testifying at the court.
Because Gerda did have the gun in her hand.
Yes, and it is believed that she killed her husband.
Yeah.
But they can't find the gun because the gun in her hand... Gun in her left hand.
Gun in my left hand must be a suicide.
Thank you. Gun in her hand does not match the ballistics of the gun that was fired into the chest of John, which is one of the reasons that... Grimdewald's so suspicious when he's polishing off that other gun.
Uh-huh.
And so at one point Lucien fights Gerda back to the ranch or whatever. And her friend is like, no. She needs rest and relaxation in her own home, which is quite correct. That all happens.
But doesn't Gerda reveal at a point, like, there's a point where she's talking to Poirot and they're trying to figure out why she had the gun in her hand if she didn't do it. And she says,
She picked it up. It was on the ground. She picked it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She sticks with that.
Shouldn't I have? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But... yeah, because she's just like, I don't know why. Like, what? Because she don't know no better. It's basically her defense. Yeah. It's like, I've never seen someone get murdered before.
Right.
Which, girl, live a little.
You don't go to the murder pits on up in Chelsea? Come on. Oh, that was real entertainment at one point. Think about that.
Oh, yeah. People used to go to hangings and whatnot.
Yeah. I was thinking Coliseum days, but like, yeah. Even that. Or like even the guillotine. Did you know?
Or even current day, people go to executions.
That's messed up, man.
Yeah.
Did you know Christopher Lee witnessed the last guillotine? I said guillotine, like some sort of plebeian. The guillotine. The last execution they ever did in France. He was there for the war, and he was just wandering around. He's like, oh, what's this crowd about? And just... and he's like, oh! That man saw some stuff.
I know
someone who is, I would say, around our collective ages, who witnessed a firing squad.
Oh my gosh. The whole squad was fired? Okay, this is why we need union representation.
Oh boy.
No. No.
But yeah, as a child, and it was quite traumatic for obvious reasons. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Gosh, I can't imagine accidentally witnessing an execution.
Yeah.
Like, you at least want the time to prepare mentally if you're going to go see it.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, what's this about? Oh, no, that's bad.
Yeah.
Yikes.
At least have the decency to prepare us before.
Here's your popcorn.
So it comes out.
Do I get 3D glasses for this?
Do I have to return them, or can I punch the things out and pretend right. that I have glasses?
Yeah, exactly. But at any rate.
Digress.
Yeah. Always. It comes out that there is a horse sculpture at Henrietta's studio.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and Poirot goes, excuse me, what now? There's a horse statue, you say? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, why? Like, come with me. And he takes the inspector over to the studio, and he goes over to the horse sculpture, and with a little implement starts hacking into it. You know, little by little.
Not cooked yet.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, nope. Pokes another little hole in it. Nope. Pokes another little hole in it. Not here. Pokes another hole and goes, aha. So he
just dismantles
part of the statue. And sure enough, there's a gun in it.
Like a bunch of Trojans. So he goes to Lucy after the inquest has been concluded. The official, I was going to say diagnosis of the court was murder by persons unknown,
mm-hmm.
right?
Which is a great name for a band. So he goes to Lucy and she goes, well, the police are done with it, but I bet you aren't. And he's like, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, well, maybe you should be. These things, they just kind of go away, don't they? Basically, like, kind of, you know, pressing him to give up. And she says something so awful when he's like, I'm not. And she goes, you really are so foreign, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Which is just rude. And also, it should be said prior to this, mm-hmm. that Midge and Edward have gotten together for... reasons unknown. They have one interaction where, and he goes, oh, she's actually quite cute. And then he proposes.
Well, they do show glances throughout the episode between the two of them. So this happens, and I forget exactly what Poirot says to her, but he alludes that he has found something out that she did not think of.
Yeah, he just literally says, "Is there nothing? Is there nothing you have thought of? And then it jump cuts quite strangely to her, like out of bed going, And then she runs to Henrietta. She goes, the holster," and she goes, "I hardly know her."
Yeah.
And now, let's go to an ad break.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Amateur Detective Club. We are grateful to be part of the Scavengers Network. You can go to scavengersnetwork.com and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. You can take a look at all the wonderful content they have. They've also been doing live streams on the Twitch channel. They're going through a Pokemon game, a pocket monster. Fun fact, I did not realize until last year that Pokemon, I knew it was pocket monsters.
Mm-hmm.
I assumed it was like Japanese for pocket monsters, and it's not. It's just an abbreviated of pocket and monsters. My whole life, wander around, I'm like, wow, Japanese and English are actually pretty similar, it turns out. Like a nincompoop. But yeah, you can go to scavengersnetwork.com. They're having a lot of fun. They're having a lot of fun over there. Check it out. You know, check it out. You can also go to our merchandise store. You go to teespring.com/themilk. You know, we got stuff. We got shirts. We got mugs for what to put your coffee in. And you, you know, you got some stickers and maybe, you know, a couple of pinback buttons for your mom. You know, can get us something nice this holiday season. Just buy it now and wait. Wait till the holiday season to give it to your mother, as it were. That's all from me, folks. Goodbye.
You can follow us on social media at ADC Pod across Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And we also have a Discord for our patrons, which is another way we are social. But if you want to get in touch with us and give us have a nice conversation, maybe email us at amateurdetectiveclub@gmail.com and give us a nice 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that really helps other people find the show.
Yeah, and if you like the show, tell somebody.
It's mad sus how some of y'all aren't a part of our Patreon. Patreon.com/ADCpod. You looking for a way to spend some of that stimmy? Well, head on over to patreon.com/ADCpod. And for as low as $1 a month, you can get access to these dank episodes and bonus content. You can also get access to our Discord channel, as Melissa has already pointed out. There you can get some real cool memes with some nice drip to it with Jaboys, Poirot, and Hastings. ADC Pod, we down with the youth.
I cannot express to you how many times I vomited in my mouth just now.
Ooh,
swallowed it like a good girl, but come on.
Hey, we do this pod for the real ones.
That's right. And if you want to be a real one, you should also... Oh, boy.
Melissa, don't you start to. You've turned her against me.
On March 29th, you have a very exciting opportunity to see a premiere of a 45-minute version of a new musical called Star-Crossed. That is March 29th at 7 p.m., and you can register to see that at starcrossedthemusicalnyc.com. That's starcrossedthemusicalnyc.com. And again, it's Zooming on March 29th at 7 p.m. And you might see a familiar face pop up there a little
Joe
bit.
Pesci.
It's me.
And you might hear a familiar voice as well. Somehow I'm still credited, even though I'm not in the production.
As is required of me by the great state of Rhode Island.
Oh.
I must say, in earnest, butt soup.
And now back to the show.
Ad break was on fleek.
As Kiki Lane said to Eddie Murphy in Coming to America, on fleek is no longer a thing. I love her so much.
Oh, she's phenomenal.
Oh my God. She needs to be in everything.
Honestly.
I want to marry her.
She's incredible.
Oh, she's so good if In Beale Street Could Talk.
Yeah.
Oh. So the reveal.
Poirot's got it all figured out.
Mm-hmm.
Lucy tells Henrietta, the holster. Henrietta right. rushes off to Gerda's house, and Poirot is waiting for her.
Yes.
And Poirot and Gerda have been speaking, and then
That's
Henrietta
right.
rolls up. That is how we arrive on the scene, and Henrietta is surprised by Poirot. Mr. Poirot. Yeah.
So, Poirot says to Gerda, you have figured out that there are ballistics in guns, so that one gun leaves a specific imprint, and that the other one won't. So when you found out about this affair between Veronica Cray and your husband, you went cray. And
my favorite part of the scene is when he says that Henrietta is sweating.
Yeah.
She is like, should I say, should I not? Should I marry Cocoa?
And so you brought two guns to confront your husband.
To a fist fight.
You shot him, threw the gun into a bush, and then grabbed the other gun to make it look like that was the one that was the murder weapon. And then, you know, subsequently it was tossed into the pool by Henrietta, who was in on it, as was Lucy. Basically, they're
on the
like
cover up.
On the cover up, as is Gargamel and
Henry. Yes.
They all
yeah.
knew.
They're all implicated in the cover up. Gerda did make this decision independently.
Yeah, she did.
But they're all Start sympathetic last. To her. They don't want her to go to jail. And so they just decide to make everyone look super suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
They pass that gun around. Everybody's seen holding that gun. And so it's really, you know, as has been happening through the whole episode, people have been really pretty confused about it.
Yeah.
And Gerda's like, I just saw him with that woman. And I knew that he had, like, it was just absolutely horrifying and disgusting, and it just completely shattered me, and I killed him.
Yeah.
Because she was reading this book at the time that there was, like, a gun swap or something, and she was reading some mystery book, and that's how she got the idea.
Yes.
Yeah.
And not only did she, like, figure it out, because it was very obvious in what had happened with John and Veronica, but she followed John and saw him having sex with like atonement style of like up against a bookcase. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, was that customary during the time? We explain why that choice is always made.
Because I mean, if I feel you like, have a bookcase, are you not gone?
That's true. I only have, but yeah, I mean, it was like, also, like, not graphic, but, like, I...
For what we're used to.
Precisely.
Oh, yeah.
It was, like, a PG-13 rather than a PG.
Yeah.
Because she walks in, and we hear them first, and I thought that was all what we were going to get, but then it, like, pans over, and you see them humping, and...
She got her PG tips, am I right?
So. It was pretty steamy, indeed.
But yeah, so she sees this, she becomes enraged, flames on the side of her head, and she has a pretty decent plan, and they all figure it out, and so they cover for her, which is quite nice.
They do.
But the undoing is the holster.
Mm-hmm.
Because she throws the gun, she just steals the gun, it still is still in the holster, she throws the whole thing in the bush. So she has to go back for it. And she has to remove the holster, because that proves, like, she didn't fire the gun. Because it was still in the holster, and she does leather work, so she takes it apart and resews it back together to look two different things, and when they're searching Gerda's room, Poirot subconsciously picks it up and remembers it, and that tableau of the poolside, which he calls the mise-en-scene, which I was like, reminded me of Meyerowitz stories. The mise-en-scene is very good. But yeah, and then Poirot goes, can you go get the holster? And she's like, yes, it's in the...
in the surgery.
Yeah, in the surgery. So they're kind of like, what? And then, so she goes off. So it's just Poirot and Henrietta. And they're like, what are we going to do? I don't know. What should we do? I don't know. And then they hear a thud.
Yeah.
And Gerda has poisoned herself.
Yep, and they she do, gave like, her...
Cut...
She gave herself a shot. Mm-hmm. As a doctor's wife would know how to do.
Mm-hmm. Cyanide?
Potassium cyanide, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they keep cutting back and forth between the conversation and her. I'm like, okay, we're going to hear a gunshot or something. Like, she clearly is taking matters into her own hands here. But yeah, and then Poirot walks Henrietta out of the apartment and lets her off the hook. She goes driving off into the sunset. And rolls a little tear, and then we cut to black.
The poor kids. End. John and Gerda's kids. Where are they?
I was saving that for my review.
Oh,
yeah. There's a she has. Don't they have two kids?
Two, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Orphans now.
Yeah.
Yep.
But as Lucy said, if you're dead, it doesn't matter.
There is that.
Oh, yeah, good, 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 good.
But yeah, for me, I would have given this a 9.5 out of 10. I had a really great time with it. I did not, like, I thought I knew at several points who had done it. And this episode for me, like, did a really good job of, like, shifting the suspicion. For a while, I thought it was the butler, Mr. Gudgeon?
Gudgeon! Yeah. Our man Gudgeon.
It was not.
In a way, it was.
Yes, but not. I had a lot of fun. I was interested in the characters this go-round. But, like, the kids thing really threw me. We spent so much time, like, hammering home the fact that John was married with kids. And the kids were like, why he couldn't do certain things. And it's just like, well, now what has become of the kids? Are Henrietta and her family going to take on the responsibility of these kids? What's happening? And where are they? And where have they been this entire episode? Who is watching the kids?
I know in the last scene, they're like, oh, what is it called? Governess took them to the zoo or something.
Oh, okay.
And Henry said, it says,
for 3 days?
No,
for 3 days.
This is just the last scene. Yeah. And Henrietta's like, oh, thank God, because we have to deal with this.
Yeah.
I'll also say at one point, it's suggested, and then we later see that Gerda goes off and hangs out with some school friends, and it's presumed that they're like helping her out, I suppose. But like, did they hire a sitter for the weekend when
exactly.
they initially, yeah, like,
yeah, we don't get clarity on that.
But for you, I thought that would be good because you hate viewing children.
Oh, I that didn't detract from the episode. I just didn't know what happened. Like, there was just a question left unanswered. I didn't need the kids this episode. I didn't need the kids to exist in this universe for the story to be told.
Yeah, that's true. They didn't need to. He didn't need to have kids, I guess.
Yeah, because he's also got his work and that sort of thing. Like, they could have.
Yeah.
Or he could have, like, grown a spine.
No, know? I mean, he couldn't have done that.
But I also thought it was disappointing that Gerda didn't know Poirot prior, because he very well could have let her go. We don't know, because she didn't live to find out. Because Poirot sometimes just lets murderers just be on their merry way.
Yeah, I know. I mean, goodness,
it seems
of all,
like she was a good candidate for that.
Yeah, I mean, who could really blame her?
That's how I felt.
I have a hard time putting a number on it, but I can. Okay. I'll say my feelings. Mm-hmm. It felt like a worse version of Murder on the Orient Express. I immediately knew that they were somehow all involved. That became clear. My suspicion was that all three of the women came together and conspired was at one point, but then it became, with Lucy acting the way she did, it was like, okay, she's somehow involved, yada, yada, yada. And I said to myself, I said, Tristan, why are you talking to yourself? I said, Tristan, at one point I was like, it looks like it's Gerda. And I would be like, that'd be so lame, is what I said or what I thought. And since it was, and then it was, like, people conspire. Like, I just figured it out as the episode happened. And since it's everybody conspiring together, it felt like a cheap knockoff of Murder on the Orient Express. We've already had this. Nothing in this episode hasn't happened in an episode before. And I think it also has to do with, had this been an episode in a different season, I would have liked it better. Because we just came off of two or three episodes of, you know, Crime of Passion and everybody kind of being implicated. Like, I don't know. It just, like, it seems like this season is just treading the same thematic elements over and over again with, you know, love makes us do crazy things, as we've said before. And so I think within the context of this season, it's like just, it's just, I'd say like a 5-6. It's not bad. It's just like an episode of Poirot. Nor does it give it, no, a 4. Because we get no moments with Poirot where we get his, only two little moments of like him trimming the hedges and his mustache. We get no idiosyncrasies from Poirot. We get, also, there's like two jokes in the whole thing. It's not very engaging on that way. And also, the cinematography is flat. The color grading is abysmal. It's too dark. I couldn't see anything. It's all gray. Also, I think, I'm sorry, I'm getting very worked up here. Every choice that they made, they could have made it further, stronger. For example, the pool is creepy and weird, and they linger on it in some shots. And I'm like, keep on it for 20 more seconds. Add some weird noises in the bottom of, you know, the bass level. Let us get uncomfortable if you want us to get uncomfortable. And it kind of felt like that throughout. Every choice they made it weakly. Weakly? Is that how you say that? They made a weak choice throughout.
Yeah.
However, also, I find all of these characters unappealing and detestable. I did not enjoy a single one of them. I thought they all were very, except for Henry. Henry and the butler were fine. Everybody else, I wanted to see thrown in a lake. Honestly. I just, they're all obnoxious. They were just all annoying. So it was like sitting there watching a bunch of annoying people knowing what was happening. It's like watching a school play, you know?
Or Home Alone.
Or Home Alone. Being annoyed for an hour and a half, and like, that's not appealing. So 4.
quite liked this episode for a lot of the same reasons that Tyler said. And I actually really started sympathizing with Henrietta and Gerda both for different reasons, because poor Gerda just gets railroaded all the time, and I had a lot of sympathy for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in trying to keep up with her nitpicky, obnoxious, cheating husband.
I will agree with that. Yes.
And Henrietta, I quite liked. She seemed very self-possessed for the most part, and
yeah.
seemed to have somewhat of an awareness that it sucked that she was in love with this idiot. and the fact that she banded together with Gerda to help her out, I thought was, you know, like, listen, yes, she did a murder, but she murdered a guy who was terrible. So
it's very Murder, She Wrote.
In a way. So it was one of those things where, you know, I had respect for her. Yes, she was trying to outsmart Poirot, but clearly Poirot also found her to be sympathetic and understood what she was up to in letting her skate by.
Yeah.
The technical things, sure, it was not as interesting cinematographically. as we have gotten in the past couple episodes, it's not on the same plane with Death on the Nile was last week. Death on the Nile, I think I rated quite highly because I thought that was just fantastic, and this wasn't quite there for me. So I'm about a 7.5 or 8, but like good, solid, easy to follow. And it kept me guessing too. I kept going back and forth because I did initially have the conspiracy idea in my head, but it kept, like, it gave me that idea, but then it made me question it.
Yeah.
I didn't immediately go, oh, that's, you know, I immediately said, oh, that could be what happened. But then they kept pulling me in different directions. The closest I ever got was thinking that Lucy was the one who did it. And in a way, kind of, but
yeah.
But only partially. So yeah, you know, no one stood out as a bad actor either. So yeah. I found this one above average and perfectly enjoyable. And I like A Crime of Passion so much better than I like A Crime of Greed and Money.
Mm.
I would so much rather someone kill somebody because of love.
I forget the person's name, but after we put last week's episode up on the Facebook, yeah. somebody commented and talked about this season and how this season in particular seems to have like an overarching thematic element, love being one of them. So I thought it was like, with that in mind this week and thinking about the season overall, it was like, oh, okay, this makes sense. It's like the cap.
Yeah.
To me, but I certainly understand, you know, where each of us are coming for respectively. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
I have no disputes there. You know, we feel how we feel about what we see.
Your feelings are invalid. We're not that kind of podcast. You got to go somewhere else for that.
Confrontation.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd always say, like, I'll agree with you. I got that was a theme and it was a choice. It's just like, you know, you eat steak and potatoes 5 days in a row, you're going to get sick of steak and potatoes.
Yeah, I just felt like, you know, we've retread a lot of ground. You know, we're nine seasons in. Like, we have seen very similar plotting and certainly similar murders.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We can't get through 2 episodes without a poison of some sort. You know what I mean? But like, it's still like, it's interesting, like, and especially with the series, because like they don't go chronologically in terms of like the books also, so it's interesting what makes sense in according to the showrunner. Like what stories like seem best as like this pairing. And we are this season working with a whole new production company that has taken on this property, and like I'm curious to see if other seasons will follow this pattern where, like, there's an overarching theme that takes us through the season.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm finding it more consistent as well, because I feel like in earlier seasons we were getting a lot more. There were some that were really fun and great, and then there were a lot more that were like...
Absolutely. Ugh. There's a lot of high and lows, whereas at least this last season, it's all been above 5 an average for all of us. It's been like above.
Yeah.
It's been, exemplary, I guess,
Strongest season that we've recapped.
Yeah, collectively.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's not a 1-2 buckle my shoe in this.
Or what is the murder of the plane with the
Death in the Clouds?
Death in the Clouds, yeah. I'll say this as well. I think had the presentation been different, I would have enjoyed it more. I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with the story, but I think if they had made interesting choices for me personally, mm-hmm. gosh, I hope that none of the directors ever hear any of the, because like, I'm so forgiving of the writing and the actor, but like, sometimes I'm like, they don't know how to shoot. They don't know, like, you're just doing coverage, forget about it. There's no
interesting.
That's mostly what it was. It was like Christopher Columbus shot this. Like, come on.
Oh, I liked it because it reminded me of the tone of the part, like the early Poirot. It was like, oh, this is like a return to home.
I see.
Yeah.
So it felt like that for me. Like, this was like visually comforting in that regard.
And that's really interesting because I am the most likely to get really upset about writing.
Huh.
Yeah. That's going to be the thing that makes me, like, I get very frustrated by.
I think I give them more of a handicap writing wise of like, it's period dialogue. Like, the way specifically Poirot speaks is like not how a real person would talk. Necessarily, like a real person that would talk today. So I'm already suspending my disbelief so much that it's fine. But even I'm sorry to harp on this so much, but like that opening shot with a car, I literally rewound because I thought I had started watching it and had stopped and then picked it up and it was started in like a quarter of the way through the episode or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I just was like, this is how you start your movie? Like, it was just very confusing.
Oh, yeah, it was. I actually didn't remember it because I was like, oh, I don't.
And I was like, oh, something's happening. Awesome. Like, we're in.
I was like,
cut off the exposition, just get to business. And like, that worked for me. But I can understand why it wouldn't work for anybody else.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not that the car didn't work for me. It's just that, like, it seemed, I just didn't remember it. Oh, it's was like, oh, that's right. Thing. We're here in the sculptor's studio. That's just, I'm like, oh, right. I don't remember a car driving up. It was very dark, though. The whole episode seemed quite
like,
dark.
Could you imagine it began with a person's, her sculpting a person's face? And we get that intimacy, and then he comes in, and like, I don't know. Like, she is doing that a bit, but it takes a minute to get there. And it just, like, you're establishing shot as a car?
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, like, I basically just remembered going into the sculptor studio.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And it's just like, he also slips and, like, hurts his poor widow wrist, you know?
Oh, that's
and
right.
It's like... Come on, I don't know. It's just like
that's fine. Like it establishes their relationship. And
it does.
She'll go up and kiss his wrist. He's like, make it better, and she's like, oh, you poor thing. It's like, oh, all right, weird, also, but whatever works for you, I guess.
It never comes up that he's a doctor. It doesn't really matter except for the end. Like, I don't know. He has to do something.
He has to have some job.
Yeah, well, he has to have a job for this mad, normal-looking man to get all these women up in arms. Anyway, I'll let it rest because otherwise we'll go into 3 hours and I do not want to do that.
I mean, my goodness.
With that, I now call this meeting of the Amateur Detective Club to a close.
Gavel sound.
Ooh, the lolly.